So thank you very much for coming just for date purposes, May 17th at the RCA Convention 2011. Topic today is Masora 2.0, Rewards, Risks, and Recommendations for Using Web Technologies to Build Community and Teach Torah. I know it sounds like a bit of a mouthful, but this would be sort of introductory for people who have not actively set up a web presence for either their shul or for teaching. This is, we're going to talk about things for both sides, about how can work both for synagogue and both for education. This would be for people who may be unfamiliar with some of the technologies, or might know of the technologies, but might not necessarily know certain strategic details or certain things you have to be aware of. So first and foremost, why use the web? For one, it's incredibly effective when done right. The amount of people whom you can reach on the web is really immeasurable. And progressively, point number two, it will soon be essential. For anyone who's under the age of, you know, certainly 35 and younger, the internet is the primary source of information that people are going to find. Just one quick example for both of us. My synagogue is the Stanton Street Shul on the Lower East Side. There are a bunch of other shuls on the Lower East Side. And a few weeks ago, we had a gentleman who was stuck by the Holland Tunnel managed to come to our shul. And I asked him, how did you come to our shul? He said when he was, you know, in traffic, he called his parents. They went to Google, found him the closest Orthodox shul. That was us. And having the website helped immensely. It's helped us attract people for, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but it helps attract people for certainly Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And it's just going to be how people are going to communicate, and that's just having a web page without getting into the other details. Most cost-effective form of communication. My synagogue has no staff. Officially, I'm the only employee. I am a part-time rabbi. And when I first got there, people were saying, oh, you should go around and hang up flyers around the neighborhood, which was not only, I would think, be a waste of a rabbi's time, but also would not necessarily be that effective. When you go on the web, because you have such a wide outreach and because the costs are so cheap to put something up on the web, you can really reach your target audience, or at least the younger target audience, for probably the cheapest amount of money possible. And finally, there are many different outlets and media available for your personal skills. And this is a point which we will elaborate later on as you break it down. Certain rabbis are excellent writers. And if you're a writer, there are plenty of opportunities to spread your writing online. You might not be a great writer, but you might be a very good speaker. So you can just record yourself, as we're doing here, and put the audio online. Or alternatively, if you're a little bit more photogenic, you can even have a video blog up there, and people can actually see Rabbi's dynamism, personality, and charisma coming through over the camera. So depending on what your strengths are, there are so many different ways that you could really tailor to whatever it is that you happen to be strongest in. And you could also, free to avoid the things that you're just not. Or alternatively, you can work on it and practice and get into it slowly. What are the risks? Well, very simple. There's this great quote by Mitch Radcliffe: a computer lets you make more mistakes faster than any invention in human history, the possible exception of handguns and tequila. We don't need to distinguish whether or not it's handguns and tequila together, but separately, it's kind of effective as well. When you post something online, we'll talk about a little bit more in detail the risks. Once it's online, it's pretty much online for good. And there could be an offhanded statement that you make, either in print or in a shiur. Someone gets a hold of it, gets disseminated across the web. All of a sudden, this is how you're known, and you get written up in papers. You have absolutely no control over what people do with your information once it gets put online. I personally had cases where I've written, say, a blog post, and people have taken it to mean something that was exactly the opposite of what I said. They said, this is what you're... That's not what I said. You can read actually right here when I made these statements. And I write in English, mind you. This isn't like, you misunderstood Nikrut Moshe. People just don't necessarily read that carefully. Which means you have to be a little bit more careful in terms of where your stuff is going to go, or, well, not where your stuff is going to go, but at least to have in the back of your head just what could possibly happen? And realize that once you put something online, the share that you're giving to five people in a room, once it's online, it's not to those five people anymore. It's to a whole lot of others. And if you do make a mistake, it could be very difficult to correct. So Misha says, Ayin ro'ah, ozen shumat, v'kol ma'asech b'sefer l'ktavim, and that's what we call Google. Because once it gets stuck in their archive, it's there. And you could be held accountable for that. And in fact, even news organizations have had that, where something gets up, they try taking it down. If someone has a screenshot of it, or if someone finds it in Google Cache or archive.org, not a whole lot you could do, and it's still part of the public record. So let's start first off with the current web options that you have. So first you have web pages or blogs, which I will call more of a substantive print media. You have podcasts, radio and audio content, or vlogs or video content. And in the fourth category, have social media such as Twitter or Facebook. These are going to be the major areas that we're going to cover in terms of what's out there and some suggestions on how to use them. My own personal experience is I've been blogging since 2003. And I've had, as of today, over 1 million page views. I started recording my shiurim on, this little recorder, and only a few months ago, and I've had over 7,000 downloads. On Twitter and Facebook, I have over 1,500, from Facebook, over 1,600 Twitter followers. And from that, it means that if I do something, just the audience is clearly that large. And I've got a fairly small synagogue on the Lower East Side, and I'm pretty much unknown. So if someone who does have, a greater name recognition can certainly get their own message out a lot more effectively. And for my own synagogue, it's drastically increased our exposure, and we've gotten new members out of it. There have been quite a few people who have only heard about our shul because of the website. They say, oh, you have a nice-looking website. I'm going to check out the synagogue. They come and they like it. Now, it's quite possible people have come to the synagogue and they don't like this either, but one of the most difficult challenges you have in a shul is just getting people in the door initially, getting people to know you exist. If you're out in suburbia, it's a little bit easier because you typically might have one Orthodox synagogue per town, unless, you might be in a teaneck or something like that. But in the Lower East Side or anywhere in New York, when there's so many shuls and so many options, it's that much more important to make sure that people know of your shul. So to at least have a decent website is very important. How can you use the web? There are really two directions that I'd like to talk about. One is an institutional web presence, meaning through your synagogue, your school, or somehow working under as an institutional representative. Here as part of the RCA convention, writing, say, on the RCA website. Or for your personal web presence, meaning it's done completely in your name, independent of whatever position that you have. The advantages of working from an institution is that you have automatic legitimization, which means if you're going to blog or write or do whatever associated with your synagogue or associated with your school, then people are going to find you through the institution. It's like, oh, this person isn't just some random person with smicha, because there are plenty of those out there who are on the internet. Someone is affiliated with this institution. Someone's actually, say, paying this person money to teach. And for the average person who's surfing the web, could give you an additional ma'ala, I suppose, as an authority, because you're actually employed in that particular institution. Also, you'll get greater initial traffic. You don't have to build yourself up as a name, because people are going to find you through your institution. Again, be it your school, be it the shul, be it some other Jewish institution or writers group. In fact, that's how Huffington Post actually works, that people write on Huffington Post and people find them. Oh, this is something that I found here. There's no content that Huffington Post actually does itself. It's just generated by everyone else, and people are fine doing that, because in a centralized location, there's a greater chance of their stuff being read than if they had their own private webpage. You improve your institution's web presence, increases your value as an employee. Speaking very practically here, if you're going to be whether or not you're in a synagogue or a school, just like for those two examples, and people are going to your institution's website to read your shiurim, listen to them, or to watch you, and all of this stuff can be statistically counted, then you could reasonably go to whomever's in charge of hiring you and say, hey, this is the type of exposure that I'm bringing to this institution. Right? And I would think that most institutions today would like the fact that rabbis are positively representing their institution. Say, hey, I'm doing great PR for the synagogue or great PR for the school. And finally, you can rely on existing technical infrastructure or staff. Depending on your synagogue, mine would be an exception, but often rabbis aren't techies. And if you are part of a synagogue that does have a techie, or you're part of a school that does have some technical support staff, they can take care of all the back-end stuff for you. You can tell them, here's what I want to do. You can sit down with them. They'll take care of all the other stuff, so you can just focus on getting your shiurim done. The disadvantages are, one, it can pose certain restrictions, both technical and editorial. You might want to do a video post, but your server might not allow it, or something along those lines. And editorial could simply be, when you're writing for a particular institution, whatever you write is reflected on that institution. You might say, want to talk about Israel, but your views on Israel might be different than your employer's, which meant a certain idea that you have is going to have to be controlled based on your based on the institution for which you happen to be writing. Secondly, problematic posts could result in termination. And I put problematic in quotes because you have no idea what's going to happen. All you need to do is write one post on your school's blog or your synagogue's, you know, rabbi message board that a board member gets very offended with, and saying, we as a synagogue should not advocate X, Y, or Z, and here it is in our name and our public website. That could come up contract negotiation time, is putting a black mark on you. And also, you would need to rebuild your reputation if you're in fact terminated. If you build up your entire web presence from a school or a synagogue and you change jobs, I shouldn't say change jobs, terminated is kind of excessive, kind of extreme, but if that's where your location is and you decide to move, everything else has to go with you. And it's really hard to bring that over, especially if that's where everyone knows you from. For on the personal side, you know, sort of lehefech, you have complete editorial and technical control over what it is that you produce, and you can build a personal brand that's going to take you beyond your current position, which means, let's say you happen to be a teacher and you want to get a pulpit, if you have a significant web presence, no matter what job you apply for, people can see what you're about beyond, you know, oh, here he is a great teacher, here he is as a great pulpit rabbi. And the disadvantages are, of course, financial and technical costs of setup and maintenance. We'll talk a bit about the costs. There, I don't think that much, but there's still things that you have to incur. And eventually you have to create your own audience to let people know that you exist. And the third point is that it could still get you fired. In fact, there's a lot that you could put on the web that can get you fired. And if you write something on your blog that people are going to say, oh, so-and-so wrote this publicly, it's going to be on the record. If someone doesn't like what you've written and it gets to the wrong people, then you could very well lose your job over something that you wrote personally. It might not seem fair, but unfortunately there are many cases of that happening. In terms of the web options, let's deal with just with the text, and probably the easiest one is blogging. To set up a blog, it's a portmanteau of weblog. And right now, or today, it's gotten so much easier than it did when I started in 2003. There are countless free software options. Probably the best one, we'll give specific examples later, is WordPress. Many free hosting sites, if you get your own space, you could install WordPress for free. You can, in fact, even blog for free at WordPress.com or Blogger. They're easy to edit and update. It's just basic text. They're very easy, your posts, to locate in search engines. And they're easy to access over multiple platforms. Simply put, if you just want a website where you write up different Torah and you post them online, technically it is one of the easiest things to do today, because there's so many utilities out there that make it easy for people who have no or limited technical experience. Different disadvantages would be, one is differentiation. It's kind of hard to stick out if you're just another person who's writing Torah online. Again, not to be a deterrent, but it's something to keep in mind. And there's a certain degree of permanence in archive.org. What archive.org is, they are a spider program that seeks to basically archive the entire web. Massive database, and by archive the entire web, I mean even pages that were deleted. Which means, if you post something up on the web, and it gets indexed by Google somehow, so it will be in Google search engine for a while, you can delete it. They may have a cached version of the page, which means it'll still exist there, at least temporarily. If it gets into archive.org, whatever you wrote is there for good. which means if you put up something that could potentially be embarrassing, or otherwise you said something stupid that you wish you could take back, once it's there, you can't. And the problem is that you can still be held accountable, and depending on how much people are out to get you, can still be found, I mean, with different amounts of effort. And that has happened on several occasions, where someone put up a web page, said something either inappropriate, incorrect, someone can get a screenshot of it, which would just be someone takes an image capture of your webpage, you see it's there. Someone might find it or link to it in some other way and say, oh, look, you see it's there, such that even when you take it down, you can say, hey, even though it took down from the original site, here's where it is in archive.org. So my comments on here still stand because this is what the person said initially. In terms of audio recording or podcasting, it's really easy to record classes that you're already giving, which is most of the classes that I give. Just pick up a voice recorder, hit record, and go. You're already teaching the class, so for you to just get a digital recorder, upload it to the internet, put in a little bit of information about what it is that you're doing, you know, it's minimal extra effort on your part, unlike, say, writing out an article. If you happen to write your own drush out, to post your drush out obviously is not, you know, that much extra than copying and pasting. But for some people who don't write up their own drush out, you know, might want to do a little bit more editing. And it's easy to record from home with minimal expense. It allows for a more informal communication in the sense that when you write, since everything that you write online is easy to be found in Google based on a certain phrase that could be searched for, here you can, you know, people aren't going to be as didactic necessarily in what it is that you're saying, or at least for me. I'm not Rav Moshe Feinstein. No one's going to be listening to my shiurim and trying to say, why did he say this and not say that? I don't think I'm ever going to be that important where people are going to really focus on every single word that I say. To my advantage, it means that I can have a more informal conversation with people and work out on different words, or different expressions and turns of phrase. And it's very easy to distribute via iTunes for subscribers, which means if you take care of certain registration issues, which are also very easy to do, if you have a blog, certain programs will actually do this for you. You can have your podcast or have your shiurim in iTunes and tell people, go here, subscribe, and anyone who happens to have an iPad or an iPhone just hits a button and it gets downloaded straight to their MP3 player. Right? So it's incredibly simple for, you know, a fan of yours to say, hey, I'll subscribe to his podcast and I'm just going to get his stuff no matter what, as opposed to having someone going off to your website each time to see what do you have that's new. What are the disadvantages? One is that it's harder to edit, in that you could edit an audio file, but it's a little bit more complicated than opening up a text file and changing a word. And it also requires additional technical skills than just, you know, copying and pasting text or writing into a box. We'll talk a little bit more about that towards the end, about specific programs that could be very helpful and some hardware if you're interested in podcasting. For video, same things in that it's a more natural lecture in combining audio and visual content. When you do something in the video realm, such as if you want to put a shiur up on YouTube, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone in the back with a camcorder and you know, you trying to talk. You could also have a video content, or at least a mixed content with audio and video, such as, let's say, you're giving a shiur and you want to put up Makoro sheets, or you have particular diagrams that might be very useful. You obviously can't do that with a pure audio recording, but if you have, say, a PowerPoint slide and put those two together, or if you have a video, you can put up various animations or other visual content that can help explain your shiur, can help get a certain point across, and from an educational standpoint, that could be incredibly useful. I mean, sure, you could do this the same like in print, just as you might upload a diagram, but it's also a lot easier if you can talk things out and you can say, you see this here in this corner, that goes to here, because not everyone can necessarily read a diagram. Disadvantages are that it's limited access. Not everyone can watch a... it's much harder for people to say watch a video. To get audio, you know, iTunes is obviously very easy, and something that's text can be sent much easier than a video. And there's a higher premium on production values, by which I mean if you're going to actually get up and give a video class, then you have to look a lot nicer. You have to, you know, make sure that the video is good. You have to make sure that the lighting is good. There are a lot of details that you need, and you also have to make sure that the audio is good, which means that these are a lot of details that you need to keep an eye out for if you want to make sure that you present yourself in the best possible light. Because if you try to do a video and you do it poorly, that's going to reflect a lot worse on you than if you didn't do it at all. You could do live streaming, but that's even more complicated because that means you have to be hooked up to the internet as you're giving the presentation, which not many people are, or at least I don't think. I mean, we don't even have internet connection in my synagogue, so that's not even an option. We don't. I don't even have an office in my shul. So, I mean, it's just, it's, you, but also, yeah, it would be rare, and I would also add that, yeah, true, I guess. Well, I don't know. Okay, fine. So even if you do have an internet connection in your shul, in theory you could, but I would also throw in the other risk, is that even with video content, you could always edit it. Or you could decide after the fact, I don't like this, I'm not going to put it up. And to be completely honest, there are some shiurim that I recorded, I didn't like how they turned out, so I didn't upload it. If you live stream it, well, depending on how you live stream it, once it's out there and you're stuck. Also, if you live stream it in certain, depending on the program, you might not be able to access it later. Meaning it's certainly good for communicating at that moment, but for, you know, posterity, you know, keeping it online, all of my, you know, audio files are still up there. You can go back and check the archive.
The idea would be is if let's say it was connected to a specific, you know, that not everybody could go to, and do the shot maser, so that's, you know, not necessarily as part of your future portfolio. It's more like a community thing.
More of a community thing. The reason why I didn't include that here, I think that's, you're absolutely right, and it could be useful in that way. I think, though, that's beyond what most rabbis would need. And then finally, we have social media. We'll talk briefly about Facebook and Twitter. Let's start here with, I'll actually discuss here a little bit more with Facebook. With Facebook, you have personal accounts and fan pages. Facebook has changed how it's operated in the past. I've been on Facebook since 2004. When it was initially released, it was specifically for colleges, and they kept it only to restricted colleges. Like, I was at University of Chicago at the time, so it was one of the few universities that were on Facebook, and a few of the Ivy League schools too, and then it gradually grew. So that's my excuse for why I've been on Facebook. In terms of personal accounts, it's when you sign up as your as just a regular user, or you could set up what's called a fan page. The difference is this: a fan page is something where you you're more of an institution as opposed to an individual. And I think I do have slides about that a little bit later. So first, let's do a specific recommendations. If you're going to be blogging, I highly recommend WordPress, which is freely available for most hosts. There's also, or you could go to WordPress.com and blog straight from there. The reason why I recommend WordPress is that it is incredibly easy to publish information, both audio, well, both text, I should say, first and foremost, audio and visual. There are numerous, I'd say thousands of plugins, by which I mean if you happen to be running WordPress and you want to do something specific, people have written code for you already that all you need to do is install it and insert information, and you don't have to worry about the technical side. There's a huge developer...
It's like an app.
Yes, like an app in that way. So for me, I podcast. So I downloaded a plugin that takes care of all my podcasting stuff for me. I give it certain information, I hit publish, all good, it's all automatic, and I don't have to worry about it. And because WordPress has, to my knowledge, one of, if not the largest developer communities, people are putting out this stuff for free, which makes your life a whole lot easier. Because all these great things that you don't need to do. And I'll just to tell you just how trivial some of these things can be, for my shul's website, someone wanted to put on a fundraising thermometer. Said, I don't want to code a fundraising thermometer. So I went WordPress, searched for thermometer fundraising, found a plugin for it, put it in, entered the information. Right? So within a matter of, like, you know, 15 minutes, I was able to show, hey, look, I just set one up. And I thought I was a genius. Which, in a, I guess, a weird way, you know, there's a bit of intelligence knowing that someone else did it for you, so I don't have to. But my point is that there's just so much out there. You really have a lot of room for creativity. If you're interested in audio, well, I guess first is a software program to download called Audacity, which is 100% and totally free. And in that, you can do your editing, you can change a lot of stuff with it. Incredibly useful. In terms of other pieces of hardware, if you're recording from your house, all you really need is a headset with a microphone. You can get them for, you know, around $20. Some are going to be more, some are going to be less. I would avoid a USB headset. If that means anything. If you're not up on that, just avoid USB because they're, I think, a little more expensive and the quality doesn't really... The quality gains are not that great and it winds up messing up your configurations. Or you could just get a simple voice recorder. That happens to be the model that I used. I got it for $45 on Amazon and I think it's more than paid for itself so far. And for video, mostly you would just need a good webcam. Oh, so I guess I didn't get into the social media. Remind me and I'll go back to the social media part. For some general recommendations, I would say first and foremost, acquire yourself a personal domain name. What that means is to have rabbisoandso.com.org.net, whatever it might be. They are relatively cheap. By relatively cheap, I mean possibly free. If you get web hosting, to give one distinction here between a domain name and web hosting is when you pay for space on the internet. Meaning, whenever you upload text or whenever you upload audio, all of that information is stored someplace. Certain websites will actually give you limited space for free. Like if you're blogging on WordPress.com or Blogger or something like that, all of your content is hosted there. What that means is, yes, you're not paying for something, but you're also a little bit limited in terms of what it is that you're allowed to put up there. Same thing like if you're posting through your synagogue's website or through your school's website, you might have limited limits of space restrictions. So, you know, I would, if you're doing something privately, I would definitely recommend, you know, getting your own web hosting space. And it can be for as little as, I guess, a decent hosting provider you can get for $5 a month. Really not that much of an expense with a great deal of freedom. And if you do sign up for a web hosting place these days, they typically give you one domain name for free. And typically you're just good to go. If you don't want to go that route, if you go to a website, maddogdomains.com, you can get a domain for, I think, $8 a year. So the expense is relatively trivial, but it's one of the best ways that you could be found. My own website is joshyuter.com, right? Very simple, easy to find. If you call yourself rabbixyz.com, very easy for people to find you, and they know that this is a repository of all the Torah or all whatever it is that you want to teach and disseminate. Yeah, you can pick whichever domain you want. And I could have just as easily registered joshyuter.org. You know, whether if you're blogging from, even if you are using the content of your institution, you can still arrange it, possibly, depending on your technical savvy and the limitations, to have that URL, to have that website name direct to your school or direct to your shul and direct to your specific area and your specific sandbox or whatever you want to call it, your special segment, your special section on even your own institution's webpage, which for professional reasons makes a lot more sense. And in which case, if you want to move, right, all you need to do is tell the host, point my domain name someplace else, and that way if you do happen to change jobs, you can still tell people, this is my website. Put it on your business cards. Might make you, you know, seem a little bit more with it. I would also recommend asking for help. Control your content would be point number two. By control your content, I mean make sure that you know what you're doing in the sense that when you're... well, actually, a couple of things with control your content. whenever you post something online, be it from your shul, from your school, or for yourself personally, make sure that you've got 100% access to the things that you produce. In the event you want to take something down, you want to be able to take something down. In the event you want to copy something, you want to be able to copy it. If you want to edit it, you want to be able to edit it. One of the worst things that you could do is to give your stuff, be it your any piece of information that you produce, in the hands of someone else to which you have no access. I know point number three, I have asked for help, feedback, and learn how to filter. By help, one of the first things that you might ask for help for is, please help me set up my website. But if you don't have access to your passwords, then you're pretty much locked out of your own site. That's really bad. And if someone else has control over that, you have no idea what they can do, and it's still going to be your name attached to it. But there are people who can help. There are people who can give you feedback over what it is that you should be doing. They could give you strategies for how to best disseminate your material. But you also need to learn how to filter. There are quite a few blogs and websites out there that are dedicated to giving advice by so-called experts, many of which are conflicting. The truth is there rarely is one good answer, and I would say you should allow yourself to grow and develop whenever embarking on new media. By grow and develop, sort of find your way there, be able to say, you know, this is a mistake, or, you know, here's a better way of doing it, and find whatever happens to work best for you. Not everyone needs a blog. Not everyone needs a podcast. Not everyone needs a video blog. They're going to be different needs. I can say again that it is incredibly effective. However, if it's done right, if it's done wrong, it can do a lot more harm than good, both for the institutions for which you work, but also for yourself personally as a career. I wanted to go back. I forgot putting in slides here to elaborate on the social media parts with the personal accounts and the fan pages. How many people here are on Facebook? Okay, as a regular user? As opposed to having your own fan page, meaning you've got your regular login account.
I have personal. It's
okay.
And then I have a separate, I guess we call it fan
page. Okay. So that's actually something you're probably going to need to change, because with institutions, since Facebook kind of exploded, they've had to change the terms of service. Used to be that if you were an institution, you would sign up for a regular account. Now they want all institutions to become and to have fan pages, because only real human beings should have personal pages. So I would say for your shul site, they actually did in the past month or so, released a utility to automatically convert your page, meaning to convert your user account to a fan page. I'd recommend you do that before Facebook finds it and deletes you completely. So keep an eye out for that. All right, you can talk to me privately about that for some help, but that's a separate issue. So really, like, no one... Okay.
Leave some time before...
I'll be up for questions and stuff and for schmoozing and for any personal advice that people have. The difference is a personal... Some people have...
You could be in deface.
Ah.
That would be a big problem. Yeah, I get your joke. What you're saying is true. That's very scary.
Deface. for the record, I was not the one who made that pun right there.
Or I could be booked.
Well, it's an interesting point. Yeah. So with your personal account is where it gets somewhat difficult, or I shouldn't say difficult as much as you have to be very careful with a personal account of separating the personal and the professional. So for me, I have a lot of personal friends up there, but you may also have congregants up there. You may have students up there that try to friend you. And if they friend you, the things that you might say want your cousin to see, you might not want your congregants to see. You might not want your, let's say 8th grade student to see. Right? So there are ways of filtering that out in terms of setting up limited profiles, or simply don't friend people or don't go on there. And, you know, for me at least, I had my blog since 2003 and I put my name on there, so I'm a little bit used to having personal accountability for what I put on the web. I have some ideas. Some people think that I might share, you know, too much, but I've been okay with it so far. It hasn't got me into trouble. But if you're not used to it, or you think that only these people, the select group of people, are going to see it, you are sadly mistaken. And anything that you do put up there, you have to take very... very strong precautions to make sure that only the appropriate people are seeing the stuff that you put up there. Even just an offhanded chance remark on Facebook or Twitter, we'll talk about a little bit more too, have gotten people fired. In fact, I just heard a story that someone just lost a job because they were friends with their boss at work and they put on their Facebook status, "I hate my bleeping job." And when your boss sees that you just posted you hate your bleeping job, you're not going to have that bleeping job for much longer. Right, so with fan pages, so the thing with personal accounts at least is that you can filter a little bit more in terms of your friends and what people see, but it's also very easy to blur the distinction between professional and personal lives. With fan pages, which is what your institutions should have, and which you could have too as a public figure, you can have that exclusively for your professional content, and just keep that. And with a fan page, anyone can view it, assuming it's public. Pretty much anyone can sign up, and they can see your updates. And it might be something that you can do in terms of keeping things separate. That if you do have a Facebook account, the truth is, on a personal level, it's fantastic for keeping up with people. And by keeping up with people, I mean certainly friends and family and colleagues whom you otherwise might not be in touch with. But truth be told, even in my own shul, since I have a relatively young congregation, they put stuff up on Facebook, I know what's going on in their lives. And that makes my life a little bit easier. So I can say, oh, someone's doing this, someone's doing that. They're not necessarily going to call me up and say, "Rabbi, this is what's going on." I can actually just see it. And that, in some ways, helps me be a more effective pastor. Twitter,
So what are we to conclude that you don't even listen?
Yeah, I didn't put on LinkedIn because LinkedIn is more for finding jobs. It's more specifically for employment opportunities. I'm looking at things for what are the websites best for actually teaching and disseminating Torah. You can do a lot on Facebook in terms of either advertising Shiurim and reach a wider audience. You could put up notes on Facebook and reach people, especially since progressively, certainly more of younger members are going to be on Facebook. It's almost like my nephew even, got on Facebook pretty much as soon as he turned bar mitzvah. There's requirement 13 and up, right? So now it's almost a rite of passage, assuming a parent doesn't, let the kids sign up early. And if these are people that you want to connect, certainly with the youth, it's one of the best ways of doing it because people spend ungodly amounts of hours on Facebook. And if you could be one out of many voices there, it's still one voice that the otherwise would have heard. LinkedIn might help you get your next job, but if you post a shear there, people might not see it. Whereas if you have a fan page, you can direct people to it. And again, young people can not only access your stuff better, be it a shear or into our Torah, but it can also, in a weird way, help you be a little bit more accessible or relatable to the younger members of a congregation. Well, certainly for the younger members, and perhaps even older ones as they get on it too.
What's the pros and cons of fan pages versus
the relative pros and cons of
a website?
With a website, because with a website you control it yourself, whereas with Facebook controls it. They can change anything. They can delete your account on a moment's notice. I don't know if you can redirect a URL. Like if you're Rabbi so and so, I don't think you can necessarily direct that to your Facebook fan page. What I can say, though, is that they're actually...
You can direct them outside the mentor, but so what's the benefit of it?
You kind of lose the point. You would lose a bit of a point. What I would say is this, and this is something that my synagogue has used quite effectively, especially with WordPress, you can sync up your blog with Facebook, such that for my shul's website, the Sand Street Shul, runs WordPress because it's really easy to update. So every time you update, a WordPress website, you could have it set to automatically go to your Facebook site, be either a personal account or a fan page, which means you write the same Dvar Torah, you hit a button, it automatically goes to Facebook, which means people can see it. Right, so for our shul, our shul's Facebook page is automatically updated on our shul's website, and there are two different ways of finding it. Why would you want to have one thing over the other? If someone wants to search for your name, it's better if people find it on your own personal website than Facebook.
There is no benefit in other words. fan page if we have a website. It's for people who don't have a website.
Now, a fan page is still useful even if you do have a website, because if people are spending so much time on Facebook, it still is a way for you to reach out to them. Or if you're having an event.
Yes, but I mean, the other way, because you're, work for you.
It's not double work if you have it synced up. Meaning, if you set up the fan page to read from your web page, then you're really just double, or well, I know it's almost like doubling your web presence, even though the numbers are wrong. Given how much time people spend on Facebook today, the odds are is that there's a greater chance that they're going to see your Dvar Torah, your shul event, whatever, from Facebook, than they are by going to your website directly. And it's just an easier way of reaching out to people.
Does that mean the website is passive? They have to come to it so to see what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And fan pages, if we have something new, would it go to them? Is it a push technology?
Yes. It's a lot more of a push technology if they, quote, liked you. Meaning if they've liked the fan page, that's just the term that they have, right? Then it would appear in their newsfeed. So, yeah, it would go straight to them.
So they don't have to come to you in order to get their information. You're on their case.
There's very little reason why not to have both. Especially a fan page. If you have your own website, to have a fan page at the very least, certainly it doesn't hurt to have one, because all you do is reach more people. It doesn't matter if only 20 people like it. Those are still 20 people whom you otherwise might not have, and you never know how long, you know, how far it's going to take in order, you know, to get disseminated. I mean, right now I've got 1,500 fans. I have no idea who's reading what, but I do know that by putting it there, there's a greater chance of someone reading it than if I just have an update on my website. That's just how people are using the web. Twitter is a little bit weirder. I only started using Twitter as a way to update Facebook. Again, it's kind of these weird things that so much is integrated one to the next. You can actually set it up that all you need to do is edit one piece, and it gets pushed to a lot of other different social media outlets automatically. And that, of course, depends on your own personal preferences. Twitter is a social network that allows you to write in 140 characters, no more. And in fact, it reminds me of a bad joke of how is Twitter like a shtiebel? It has 140 characters or less. Again, it's a bad joke. Also, it isn't mine. With Twitter, it's more of a free-flowing conversation. The advantages are you've got a very broader market. You've got people you can speak to at any, pretty much on anything. Downside, obviously, is with 140 characters, it doesn't give you much to work with in terms of having a real discussion. But it's there. You know, I would say use it, you know, if you can find it useful, use it. If you don't find it useful, don't use it. You don't have to be on Twitter. Facebook probably will give you a lot more bang for the buck than Twitter. And it's really, again, very easy to set up. The other thing which I should warn about both of these with social media is Bitul Torah. It is incredibly easy to waste, again, crazy amounts of time on these things. So if you are at least somewhat focused and directed on what you're using it for, it can be very effective. Just try not to get too sucked into it, like anything else on the web. And again, I would say even with the social media, give yourself some time to build up an audience to see what really works the best, and do whatever work, what you find most effective for what it is that you have to offer. From personal experience, I've been able to reach people that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to reach, but I also have no illusions that I'm not going to become a web celebrity. Relatively unknown rabbi of a small synagogue in New York. It's gotten me a lot more exposure than he otherwise would have had, but my expectations aren't that great. And if you're trying to do this because you want to become an internet celebrity, yeah, I'm sure you could pay a consultant a whole lot of money, but I'm not even sure how effective that is going to be. So, Bikitsur, the rewards are obvious in that, you know, again, you can reach amazing amount of people. You really have no idea just how far stuff can go on the web. You can, in fact, track who's seeing your website. And I know that even, you know, years ago, I was getting hits from places I never would have thought, not even close to my intended audience. It can certainly help your synagogue. It can help your school. It can help you professionally as you go, you know, from job to job. On the other hand, it can also, if you don't do it right, can get you into a lot of trouble. Or at least realize that once you do have a web identity and you're okay with that web identity, if it accurately reflects who you are, it's wonderful. Because, yes, it's going to preclude you from getting certain jobs, but the truth is you wouldn't want those jobs anyway. And in fact, there was one member of my show was telling me how he didn't get a particular job because someone found something he wrote. He's actually a journalist. So, all right, so he didn't get that job. But if, you know, someone's, if you wrote a Dvar Torah and another soul is like, you know, I think you're too, you know, Machmir, or I think you're too Mekel over something that you wrote, you know what? It's probably a good idea that it might not be offensive. It might, in fact, help you get better jobs if they've got a better sense of who you are, as opposed to coming in and them trying to figure it on their own. But again, you know, be very careful with what it is that you say or put online. Look, I know we have issues here with the, you know, our own private mailing lists about something that goes off and gets disseminated, or emails that you might think are private, God knows where they wind up. Kal vachomer is something that's intended for public use. And you have to be at least okay with that you can put something up that might annoy some people. You know what? That's okay. I mean, you have to be okay with people getting annoyed with things from time to time. Don't get sucked into what are called flame wars, which are when someone makes like ad hominem attacks or go off on crazy rants. Yeah, that's another advantage. If you control your own content, if someone does leave a crazy rant as a comment on one of your posts, you can easily, well, you could delete that in theory. There are websites that talk about commenting policies. Thank God I've had only one flame war on my website and I got apologies from both people. But my website is a little bit rare. If you go to Gil's student site here, Hurim, you can find some ridiculous discussions there in the comments, you know, that are very easy to get sucked into. You might not want to deal with that at all. You might, because it helps drive traffic. I don't know. Leave that up to you. But as long as, you know, you decide how you want it to be, make that decision. If you want to change, worry about changing later. It's going to be a process and it has to evolve, because as the web technologies evolve and the way people use the web are going to change, you're going to have to adapt to those too. Well, if you want to. If you're okay with what you're doing, stay with what you're doing. But certainly I would say, if you're not on the web yet, it's worthwhile looking into. The costs are relatively minimal, and assuming, you know, you have, you know, a decent amount of seichel, I don't think that most people here are going to have too many issues with what they put online. And there are enough people around here, certainly I would be more than happy to answer any questions if they've got something specific. Wow. Guess that's a bad sign. Okay, well, I guess that's as good a time as any to wrap up. But if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to present either now or privately.